hello and welcome to Flick Fix on 99.9 KXRW. This show is going to take you on an unforgettable adventure through the silver screen. I'm your guide, Austin Reed. Join me as we delve deep into the realms of Hollywood's finest creations and hidden gems along the way. Movies have the power to transport us to incredible worlds, evoke a wide range of emotions, and ignite our imaginations like nothing else. They capture our hearts, challenge our minds, and provide us with a much-needed escape from the ordinary. Flick Fix is here to celebrate the magic of cinema, to honor the art of storytelling, and to light up a passionate flame within each and every one of you. So grab your popcorn, dim the lights, and get ready to immerse yourself in a world of lights, camera, and action. Welcome back to Flick Fix, the show where new releases meet old favorites. We've got quite the lineup tonight. For the new releases, I'll be stepping into the octagon of emotion with The Smashing Machine. Then, we're diving into the neon-lit circuits of Tron Ares. And then we'll curl up for something a little different, Good Boy. A horror story told from a dog's perspective. Yeah, you heard that right. And for the spotlight review, I'll be talking about one of my personal favorites from the last few years, Pig. It's a quiet, haunting film about loss, identity, and the healing power of food. And it might just feature one of Nicolas Cage's best performances to date. Stick around, we've got a lot to unpack tonight. The Smashing Machine is a biographical sports drama written, directed, produced, and edited by Benny Safdie. It stars Dwayne Johnson alongside Emily Blunt and follows the story of MMA fighter Mark Kerr as he rises to the top of his sport while wrestling with personal demons and emotional turmoil along the way. First off, I know Dwayne Johnson gets a lot of flack for playing it safe. There are so many memes about him starring in five different movies set in the jungle or always playing some version of tough guy with a heart. He's built a brand around being reliable but rarely risky. But still, him being in this movie works. A24 gave him the chance to step away outside his comfort zone, and he delivers in ways I don't think anyone expected. This is, hands down, his best performance to date. Nothing he's done before even comes close. Johnson digs deep in the role, showing a level of vulnerability and emotional weight we haven't seen from him before. You really believe he's a man torn apart by fame, addiction, and the relentless pursuit of greatness. His portrayal of Kerr feels both raw and respectful, like he wanted to honor the man, not just play him. Emily Blunt, as always, brings her A-game. She injects real dramatic heft into her scenes, grounding the story with warmth and heartbreak. The chemistry between her and Johnson feels authentic, and their dynamic gives the film a pulse even when the pacing slows down. You can tell both actors committed fully. This isn't a glossy, feel-good sports biopic. It's messy, it's painful, and human. Another thing I really appreciated was the film's visual style. Since most of the story takes place between 1997 and 2000, Safdie uses a 90s-style camcorder aesthetic that gives everything this gritty, documentary-like texture. It's slightly shaky, a little grainy, but it pulls you into that era perfectly. There's something nostalgic about it, without being distracting. It feels real, like we're watching lost footage from Kerr's heyday. What also stands out is how the movie refuses to follow the traditional sports movie formula. There's no big crowd-pleasing montage or predictable underdog arc. Instead, Safdie opts for a quieter, more observational approach, showing Kerr's highs and lows with an almost uncomfortable realism. It's refreshing to see a sports biopic that doesn't spoon-feed you emotional beats or heroic crescendos. But This creative decision is also where the film stumbles for me. Because of the deliberately low-key pacing, the stakes don't always land. The emotional tension builds in some places, but in others, it just fizzles out. There are plenty of fights and big moments, but they rarely feel urgent or consequential. For a story centered on a man battling inner demons and external pressure, you want to feel the intensity, the fear of what's at stake. Instead, the film sometimes drifts, making it hard to stay invested in the outcome of certain fights or personal milestones. Another issue lies in how much Safdie tries to pack into the runtime. You can tell he wants to capture every side of Mark Kerr, the fighter, the addict, the lover, the friend, and while the ambition is admirable, it comes at a cost. The film ends up juggling too many ideas at once: addiction, fame, toxic masculinity, love, legacy, pain. These are all powerful themes, but when squeezed into a two-hour film, they start bumping into one another. The result feels a bit overstuffed, like trying to force too many puzzle pieces into one frame. The movie's still strong and watchable, but the execution doesn't always match the intent. Even with its flaws, The Smashing Machine deserves credit for taking big swings, especially for Dwayne Johnson. It's not a perfect film, but it's a fascinating one, and it finally lets The Rock show that he's capable of more than charm and explosions. Watching him break down emotionally and rebuild himself as Kerr is genuinely moving. It's a pretty powerful piece of work that reaches for greatness, but doesn't quite land the knockout. I'm giving The Smashing Machine a 6 out of 10. Tron: Ares is a science fiction action film and the third installment in the Tron series, following 2010's Tron Legacy. Directed by Joachim Rønning, it stars Jared Leto, Greta Lee, and Gillian Anderson. This story follows Ares, a highly advanced program who's sent from the digital realm into the real world on a dangerous mission, marking humanity's first face-to-face encounter with artificial intelligence. Now, let me say this up front. Tron has to be one of the most frustrating franchises out there. The original 1982 film was a groundbreaking idea, an entirely new concept that visualized what it might look like to be sucked inside a computer game. It was imaginative, bold, and ahead of its time. You'd think a concept that cool would have spawned decades of stories, an expanded universe, maybe even some emotional depth to explore the human side of technology. But instead, the Tron series has remained oddly hollow. The worlds look great, but they've always felt kind of empty. Sadly, Tron: Ares doesn't really change that. Let's first talk about what does work, the visuals. Because yeah, they're absolutely stunning. Here, the filmmakers swap the usual neon blue glow for a deep mix of crimson and black, giving the digital grid a sleek and dangerous feel. It's bold, stylish, and at times mesmerizing. Every frame looks like it could be hung in a sci-fi art gallery. But as dazzling as all that eye candy is, it still can't mask the fact that there's not much emotional substance underneath. And I think I figured out why the story fails to connect. It's the pacing and timing of the franchise itself. The first Tron came out in 1982. Legacy arrived nearly 3 decades later, and now Ares drops 15 years after that. That's over 40 years with only 3 films and almost no consistent narrative thread holding them together. Every time Tron returns, it feels like it's starting over from scratch. Most familiar faces vanish, emotional arcs reset, and we're handed new protagonists who don't have enough time to make us care about them. The cast gives their all, but no one really stands out. Greta Lee does what she can with the material, and Jared Leto, well, he's Jared Leto. Interpret that however you want. The dialogue often feels more mechanical than the programs themselves, and the film's attempt at nostalgia just don't hit the way they're supposed to. Instead of evoking the magic of legacy, it feels like the filmmakers are just waving neon signs saying, "Remember this?" By the end, Tron Ares feels less like a movie and more like a high-budget theme park attraction, an audio-visual thrill ride with no real story waiting at the end. But to its credit, it's at least entertaining. It's not a snooze fest, and it keeps your eyes glued to the screen with all that gorgeous design work and sleek action. Still, once the lights fade and the grid powers down, there's not much left to hold on to. For me, Tron Ares is a 4 out of 10. A film that looks amazing, but lacks the emotional circuitry to truly come alive. Good Boy is a supernatural horror film directed by Ben Leonberg in his feature debut, co-written by Alex Cannon. It stars Leonberg's own dog, Indy. The film takes place in a haunted house, but what makes it stand out is that it's told entirely from the perspective of a dog. Sometimes it's nice when a movie strips away all the flashy gimmicks and just goes back to basics. Good Boy does exactly that. It's a refreshing, down-to-earth story that manages to be both eerie and oddly heartwarming. We follow a lovable dog who moves into a new house with his owner, only to sense that they aren't alone. Sure, there are ghosts and creepy noises, but what surprised me was how much emotional depth this film finds in such a simple premise. Beneath the haunted house trappings lies a surprisingly touching story about loyalty, fear, and connection. Of course, the real hook here is that canine point of view. Seeing the supernatural through a dog's eyes adds a new layer of what could have been a standard ghost story. The perspective isn't just a gimmick, it changes how we interpret every sound, shadow, and moment of silence. It's a creative and surprisingly effective way to tell a horror story, and when the film's larger meaning clicks into place, it really lands. I won't spoil what that meaning is, but once I pieced it together afterwards, I found myself appreciating this film even more. That said, I can already imagine some viewers brushing this off as too simple, and honestly, that's fair. It's a minimalist story. But sometimes a stripped-down approach is exactly what we need. Not every horror film has to reinvent the genre or throw buckets of blood at the screen. Good Boy works as a kind of palate cleanser, a reminder that even small, intimate stories can feel meaningful when told with care. And speaking of care, this movie is clearly a labor of love. Leonberg using his own dog as the star is already charming enough, but finding out that this production took 3 years to complete makes it even more impressive. Every frame feels personal, like the work of someone who truly believed in the story they were telling. You can feel the affection behind it. If I have one gripe, it's with the scares themselves. The horror side of Good Boy doesn't always land as strongly as it could. The pacing can be uneven, slow burn one moment, then suddenly jumping into scary territory without much buildup. A few of the scare sequences rely too heavily on vague, shadowy figures that don't quite deliver the intended jolt. It's not that I wanted it to go full hardcore horror, but I do wish it leaned a bit more into the atmosphere. The film had the potential to be quietly unsettling, yet at times it settles for familiar tricks that feel a little too safe. In the end, Good Boy isn't a perfect horror film, but it's a deeply endearing one. It trades big scares for quiet emotion, and while that might not satisfy everyone, I found its sincerity hard to resist. It's the kind of film that reminds you why small, heartfelt stories can still make an impact, especially when told through such an unexpected lens. For me, Good Boy earns a solid 7 out of 10. Oh, and stay after the credits. Alright, it's time to take a break. But when we get back, Loss, Food, and Nicolas Cage. I'll be covering the 2021 film Pig when we get back. You are listening to Flick Fix on 99.9 KXRW.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. licensed in Washington State. Our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at BuckleyLaw.net. Again, that's BuckleyLaw.net. Buckley & Associates, we speak your language.
Programming like this is made possible by support from High Five Cannabis, your local cannabis connection, in Vancouver and Stevenson, Washington. High Five offers flower, concentrates, edibles, tinctures, topicals, and more. Whether you're new to cannabis or know what you need, their staff is available to assist. If you go to highfivecannabis.com, spelled H-I-G-H, the number 5, cannabis.com, you can learn about their specials like Munchie Monday, Senior Tuesdays, Waxy Wednesdays, and Loyalty Thursdays. Again, that's highfivecannabis.com.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
Welcome back. You are listening to Flick Fix on 99.9 KXRW. Sometimes a movie begins with a single haunting image. For director Michael Sarnowski, it was a photograph of a truffle hunter sitting quietly on a porch beside his pig. That simple picture sparked the idea for Pig, a story about isolation, companionship, and the things we cling to after losing everything. And major spoilers ahead. Let's start the music and begin. Sarnowski briefly considered setting the story in Europe, maybe France or Spain, where truffle hunting is part of the landscape, but ultimately chose Oregon. The Pacific Northwest had exactly the tone he wanted: damp, quiet, and a little melancholy. At the center of the film is Rob, a former Portland chef who walked away from his life after the death of his wife. He now lives deep in the woods with his truffle pig, finding peace and simplicity in solitude. But when that pig is stolen, Rob is forced to re-enter the city he left behind, confronting not only the people who wronged him, but the memories and regrets that never left. On paper, it sounds like a revenge thriller. In practice, it's something far gentler and more soulful. A meditation on grief, identity, and love without expectation. Sarnowski structured the story like a 3-course meal, each chapter named after a dish. It's a clever nod to Rob's culinary background, but it also echoes the process of healing. Bitter, then savory, then sweet. That rhythm of taste and emotion was born from Sarnowski's own experience with loss after his father's passing, shaping the film into something deeply personal. And when it came to casting Rob, Sarnowski needed someone who could say more in silence than most actors say in a monologue. Enter Nicolas Cage. After years of big, eccentric performances, Pig gave him the chance to disappear, to play stillness instead of chaos. Before filming, Sarnowski gave Cage 2 key reads: the graphic novel Asterios Polyp, about a broken artist rebuilding his life, and Chef Marco Pierre White's memoir, The Devil in the Kitchen. Both helped Cage understand Rob as a man of artistry and discipline, someone who once lived for perfection, then withdrew from the world when it betrayed him. To make Rob believable, Cage trained with real Portland chefs Christopher Sarnecki and Gabriel Rucker, studying not just cooking, but movement, how a chef handles a knife, how they listen to sound and texture, how they treat food as memory. That sense of ritual adds layers to Rob's quiet dignity. Filming began in September 2019 and wrapped in only 20 days around Portland and the surrounding woods. Despite its small budget, the production team gave the movie an incredible atmosphere. Sarnowski wanted the audience to feel Rob's journey through shifting realms, the calm of the wilderness, the tension of the underground fight club, the bittersweet glow of Portland's fine dining world. Composers Alexis Grepsis and Philip Klein carried that transition musically, beginning with warm acoustic tones like baritone violins and gently evolving into colder, sharper textures as Rob faced the past he'd buried. For such a quiet, independent film, Pig turned into something rare, intimate yet universal. Sarnowski once admitted he might have cast a lesser-known actor if he had to, but Cage's devotion elevated every moment. What started as a modest art film about a truffle hunter and his pig became one of the most emotionally profound movies of this decade. Pig was released on July 16, 2021 by Neon, a studio known for nurturing thoughtful, character-driven films like Parasite and Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Though it arrived quietly, the film built a reputation through word of mouth. Made for under $5 million, it earned roughly $3.2 million at the box office. Not blockbuster numbers, but strong for a reflective indie drama released while theaters were still recovering from the pandemic. But where Pig truly triumphed was in its reception. Critics embraced it as a revelation, calling it one of Nicolas Cage's most soulful performances in years. On Rotten Tomatoes, Pig sits near universal acclaim, hailed as a quiet masterpiece that redefines redemption through empathy. Alright, it's personal time. I've seen Pig twice now, and both times it hit me hard. The first time, it completely subverted my expectations. I went in blind, I don't even think I saw the trailer, and I was ready for a revenge-driven thriller. But of course, what I got instead was something much deeper. A quiet, contemplative story that broke my heart and stayed with me for quite a bit. The second viewing struck a different chord. This time, I saw Pig as a story about returning, about coming back to a place that once defined you and realizing it's changed, even though pieces of you still remain there. It's a feeling I think a lot of us can relate to. We grow up believing our hometowns will always be the same, that our memories and friendships will stay frozen in time. But of course, life moves on. People change, places evolve, and we're left trying to reconcile who we were with who we've become. For Rob, that journey is heartbreaking. Once a renowned chef in Portland, he built his identity around creation and connection, and then, after losing his wife, he vanished from that world completely. When he returns years later, he finds echoes of himself everywhere, in restaurants he influenced, in the chefs who remember him, even in the flavors that once carried his touch. Through these encounters, we watch him confront both grief and legacy, the painful realization that the world moved on without him, but that his imprint never truly faded. What continues to amaze me is how the movie transforms the revenge formula into something quietly humane. Rob doesn't fight back with violence. He does it with understanding, through food and compassion. He challenges a chef who abandoned his dream for a flashy restaurant, reminisces with another about a salted baguette recipe, and ultimately faces the man responsible for stealing his pig, not with anger, but with a meal. That dinner with Darius is one of the most powerful moments I've ever seen in a film like this. So we have Rob and Amir entering Darius's lavish home, not with threats, but with ingredients. Rob sets the table himself, choosing the same wine and preparing the same dish he once cooked for Darius and his late wife years earlier. Every step, the chopping, the seasoning, the plating, feels like ritual, like remembrance. Darius sits there, wary at first, unsure of what to make of this man, quietly recreating a memory he'd long buried. Then they sit, three men connected by grief and guilt, share a meal in silence. Slowly, the taste begins to unlock something in Darius. You can see it on his face. The recognition, the heartbreak, the sudden rush of loss. He excuses himself from the table and breaks down in another room, overcome with guilt, and finally confesses the truth. The junkies he hired to take the pig mishandled the pig, and it died. In that moment, the sound drains from the film, Rob stands there, taking in the weight of it all, the search, the memories, and the hope, and collapses in tears. It's raw, devastating, and deeply human. And yes, I cried over a pig. But really, it's not just about the animal. It's about the love we give and the pain we carry when that love is taken from us. Then comes that final moment, Rob returning home, listening to a recording of his late wife singing Bruce Springsteen's I'm on Fire. The song drifts through the credits like a lullaby, closing the story not with anger or resolution, but with quiet acceptance. It's the perfect ending for a film that whispers instead of shouts. I know I'll revisit Pig again in a few years, and like any great meal, it'll probably taste a little different each time. Pig is one of those rare films that remind us just how powerful stillness can be. It doesn't need spectacle or noise, just honesty. Beneath its simple premise lies a deeply human story about loss, love, and the traces we leave behind. Every frame feels intentional, every silence meaningful, and Nicolas Cage delivers one of the most tender, vulnerable performances of his career. It's a film that treats grief as not something to conquer, but something to understand, an echo that softens but never disappears. Whether you see it as a meditation on art, identity, or healing, Pig lingers. And for a movie filmed right here in the Pacific Northwest, it's more than local pride. It's proof that beauty can come from the simplest of ingredients, and that sometimes the quietest stories feed us the most.
Nobody wants pubs around here. It's just a terrible investment.
What was going to be your signature dish?
Liver scotch eggs with a honey curry mustard.
They're not real. You get that, right? None of it is real. The critics aren't real. The customers aren't real. Because this isn't real. You aren't real.
Okay.
Derek, why do you care about these people? They don't care about you. None of them. They don't even know you. Because you haven't shown them. Every day you'll wake up and there'll be less of you. You live your life for them and they don't even see you. You don't even see yourself. We don't get a lot of things to really care about.
And that wraps up this episode of Flick Fix. Tonight, we explored grief through food, passion through purpose, and the quiet power of the movie Pig. If you enjoyed the show, consider supporting KXRW by visiting kxrw.fm and clicking on Donate. Every dollar helps keep community radio alive and gives local voices, just like this one, a platform to share stories, music, and of course, movies. I'm Austin, and this has been Flick Fix on 99.9 KXRW. Thanks for tuning in. Take care of each other out there, and I'll catch you next time at the movies.